what's up? Welcome back to another episode of 200 and Counting. I'm your host, Tia Hill, and there's a lot going on in the world right now. It's pretty weird. Things are pretty weird. It feels weird. I don't know where you live if you're listening, but here in New York, things are getting pretty weird. You know, a lot of us have been stuck at home doing We're practicing social distancing, doing our part. I want to give you guys recommendations, and I know now is the time. If you're going to be on Netflix watching documentaries, now is the time. So this episode, I wanted to do a documentary that it's about a cult. And I think this is one of the first cult documentaries I've done on the podcast. And it's an often overlooked cult because it's like a really low key cult. It's not one of the famous ones. It's probably not something that you're going to have a whole podcast series devoted to. Just as a warning, there is like a quick reference to some unsavory assault. So if that's something you're sensitive to, just be aware of that going into the episode. But today's episode is going to be about a documentary called Holy Hell. So Holy Hell is not your average, it's not like a typical cult documentary. A lot of times people ask me for cult documentary recommendations, and this is like my favorite one on Netflix because it's not a cult that you would hear about. You're not going to get like a whole podcast about this cult. It is very, very unique. So technically it's called a spiritual group, and they're known as the Buddha Field. It was started in the 80s, and this is a group of people who are trying to like reject the yuppie movement of the 80s and blah, 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 blah.
They were so alive, living from their heart and playing and jumping in ice cold rivers and hiking through the forest at night. And oh my God, I want me some of that.
Now, the reason that it's culty is because they did have a group leader named Michelle. A lot of them at the beginning of the documentary were like, this, you know, we used to joke and say this was not a cult. And I think what's interesting about a lot of cult documentaries is that usually when you hear the stories of these cults, the reason that we call it a cult is because everybody ended up dead or something, you know, like with Jonestown, with, you know, Charles Manson and his group of people. It's always something where like everything's chill and then somebody either gets killed or there's some mass death or something weird like that happens. And so that isn't necessarily the case with this group of people. The director of this documentary had actually been an ex-member of the group. So he decided to make this film to kind of look back on his experience. On the one hand, that meant that there was like a lot of really, really great footage to help visualize it, you know, see all of this inside footage from them walking in the grass in the woods. But this man's whole story was that he had an existential crisis and then he ended up joining this group because he was looking for the purpose in life. So he's narrating. But the thing about the documentary is that the beginning starts with the narration and then you forget that he's narrating it. And then at random points, like 20 minutes in, he's like, and so that's why I'm like, oh, okay, I forgot you were even there, sir. Okay, all right.
My name is Will Allen. I started making movies when I was 13. I went to film school, and 3 weeks after graduating, my sister introduced me to her spiritual teacher, and my whole life took a different path.
But also, I feel like just because you're in the group, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to keep putting yourself in the documentary. I think with docs where people center themselves, I said this before, but I think it depends. You have to establish either, yes, this documentary is about me and my journey, and I'm going to give you a reason to care about it so the viewer can be like, okay, I'm watching this man's journey. Or you have to be like, I experienced this thing and that's why I made the documentary, but you know, I'm gonna just let the story tell itself. You have to decide whether or not you're gonna be like putting yourself back in to narrate a little bit or not, because that was the thing that kind of made it disjointed at the beginning, because by the middle, you don't even hear from him again. So the point of the group was to kind of find God, to find your purpose in life. It was super, super vague, which first of all, that's a red flag to me. That is a red flag because you can't even really tell me why you're in the group. You know, they described it as like it was a group of friends and they're having fun and they live together and it's like really, really fun. You know, they're all about exercise. They're all about health. They're all about making sure your body is looking its best and making sure that you're living your best life.
This is what we wanted. It was our little utopia in the middle of this big giant city.
Constantly you were being fed, like you're soul was being fed with love and with inspiration and awe.
They also had weekly individual hypnotherapy sessions with Michelle, who they also called the master. And first of all, I'm sorry, but you know, ain't no black people in this group because we are not about to join a group where the head of it is called the master. Okay, we already been through that. We're not doing it again. Not a single, no, no, no. But this man was a hypnotherapist apparently. So they would have these individual hypnotherapy sessions called cleansings, which is always a recipe for disaster because if this is not a licensed professional, you should not be unloading yourself onto this person who's just like, yeah, I can hypnotize people. I'll cleanse you, and telling this man all your secrets because of course that comes back to bite them. And a lot of them in their interviews were like, yeah, you know, we used to joke if this was a cult, at least it was a really good cult. Haha. And I'm like, okay. They were talking about how all of their money, if they had any money or if they worked, it went towards rent, it went towards groceries. And they were like, it's more than just roommates, like blah, 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 blah. We were a family, which is cool. But it ended up being kind of a strange commune situation. And I couldn't really tell. It was hard to tell whether or not they were actually in regular society, because most of the footage was them in the woods or them in this like big pool of water. A lot of the footage was they were dancing in the woods. They're crying at this man's feet. And he does these rituals to them in the woods where he like rubs their forehead really, really hard with his finger. And I don't know. And they're like, you feel lightheaded and you feel like you saw God. And he has something called the knowing, which is he chooses members from the group and then he takes them to go meet God. So you have to be selected to do the knowing. And one woman is like, I wanted the knowing so badly. And he never gave it to me. And I'm like, girl, that's okay, because this was a scam. You are not seeing God. You're probably just sleep deprived and hungry. That's why. And the man's a hypnotherapist.
The knowing was the realization of being able to see and hear and taste God.
You could only comprehend what this means to finally have God being revealed to you in his purest form.
So Michelle had all of these people under his thumb. They're all living together. They're all in the woods. They're doing whatever. And the whole first half of the documentary is really, it is a very slow build. But I think what really drew me in the first time that I watched it is because you know from the synopsis that it's some kind of cult. But because the buildup is so slow and because, you know, nobody's getting killed, you're like, oh, well, okay, this does kind of look nice, I guess, but it's like a little bit weird. Hindsight is 2020. So to me, this whole thing looked extremely disturbing. But I remember I watched this with a friend and he was like, I wouldn't mind doing this. I would do this. This looks great. Like, they're in shape. I was like, what the hell is wrong with you? It's clearly a cult. We both read the same Netflix description before we clicked the shit. Like, you know, it's a cult. There also was an interview with one of the members of the group who said that he used to have to make Michelle fruit salads every morning. And he was like, I would carve the most beautiful fruit salads in the morning with photos and in different shapes and whatever. And like, sometimes he wouldn't even eat it, but they were beautiful. And then they like flash pictures of like the different scenes he'd carved out of fruit salads, which was totally unrelated to anything, really. He just like, the man just loved fruit salads, so he would make them for them.
So I would go to the store and I would buy the most beautiful fruit I could find. And I started carving Buddhas out of papaya. I carved the Last Supper out of fruit. I would spend hours, and it was within my being, I was making a fruit salad for God.
I think what's interesting is because I spent so long describing the cult to you, it's clear that people obviously felt something. So I don't want to discount people's personal spiritual experiences. You know, everybody feels in touch with their spirituality in a different way, and everyone has a different path to achieve that. However, I think what's interesting is when they would go through the stories of every single member of the group, all of them had a similar background in that they came from either, you know, they had a rough upbringing, or they came from a broken home, or they were like, I was searching for something in life. Like, I was searching for something. I just wanted something, which is interesting because I think there is a universal human experience of wanting to know why we're here and searching for a purpose and wanting, whether that's a hobby or whether that's your job or whether that's, you know, starting a family. Everybody has something that they want that they feel like will make them feel fulfilled. And it is unfortunate that these people thought that they found that thing, but then it turned out to be like they were being manipulated. I'm gonna just skip to the end briefly. This lasted over 20 years. This was over 20 years, which is why I think it's so cool that they really eased into the buildup of the bad parts of the cult. Because if they didn't do that and they just said, you know, this crazy stuff happened and these people were in this group for 20 years and all this happened, then you would automatically go into it thinking like, why the hell would somebody do that? I mean, I was kind of already thinking that, but you know, whatever, that's not my business. By the time you're watching the documentary and they get to year 20, you're like, damn, already? Jesus, time flies. The time really flew.
I don't think about that. It doesn't come to my consciousness because I only remember what was good for me and what helped me. And what helped me was this connection we had with each other.
So the thing about Michelle was, when he wasn't giving the knowing and when he wasn't leading these spiritual seminars and doing what looked like baptizing people, I don't know, there were a lot of B-roll shots of people like half dressed in water, like swimming around. And everyone's like, you know, we were all so hot and beautiful and smart and amazing and white. But Michelle didn't let any of us have sex. sex. Like, we weren't allowed to have sex. And he had like a very juvenile view of sex in the group. And no one was allowed to be with one another. And if he found out that you were together, then he would try to break you up. And apparently one guy was like, he told three different women not to date me because he did not want me to be with anyone. And I was like, what the hell? And the reasoning was always like, you're not focusing on God. But it was like, the longer this documentary went, the less God was mentioned. At the beginning, it was all about God. By the middle, they were like, God who? Like, you couldn't even tell that's why they had joined the group in the first place, because it was so focused on this man. One woman said that she'd gotten pregnant because she'd accidentally gotten pregnant, and then he made her have an abortion. And then she got pregnant again with this man who she really loved. And she was like, okay, well, maybe this time I'll be able to leave the group. And he was like, no, you have to get an abortion. So she got an abortion again. And obviously we are pro-choice here, and we do not shame women and their ability to be autonomous over their own body. However, that obviously really takes a toll on someone, and she did not want to get an abortion, and she was forced to, which is extremely traumatizing, by this man who's like, oh no, come here and massage me, because he was making people massage him, because that's basically what he got out of it. At first they were like, yeah, we all pitch in money to help, and we all live together and we all pay rent. Then it became, okay, any money I had went to him, and also I spent all my time doing service for him, and I was massaging his feet, and I was doing this. They built like a bird sanctuary for him or something, and then it was overrun with rats. They got like a, what is that thing from Finding Nemo? A wallaby. Yeah, you know, like P. Sherman 42 Wallaby Way, Sydney, one of those little like Australian mini kangaroo looking things. They had one of those in there. And then eventually the bird sanctuary was overrun with rats, and then he made them kill all the rats. And they were like, we were there with shovels, and like we had to, and it was crazy. And I'm like, go leave. Leave. I'm not doing no. Mm-mm. So here he was like making people massage him every night, making them kill rats in his yard. And then he also had his own dance studio. So this man like really, really wanted to be a dancer. And, you know, I haven't really gotten into what he looked like, because I don't think I've gotten into enough of what the visuals were in this documentary. This man looked scary as hell. Okay. This man looked so creepy, to the point where when I would pause this documentary and like the little image would come up on Netflix, I was like, I have to turn off the TV because it was so terrifying looking. Please look, Google holy hell and look up what this man looked like. He had a lot of work done on his face, and it looked like he was wearing a mask, and he looked very, very scary. And, you know, by the end of this, you'll have a reason to be scared of him. And he talked really slowly, kind of like this, and really thought about what he was about to say. He had an accent too, but I'm not going to be on here imitating people's accents because that's rude. But he spoke so slowly, and he was so creepy looking, and he looked like a little mask man. Ugh. And they even showed images of him when he was younger, and he just had this strange look in his eye. I was like, I don't like this man. There's something off about you. I don't like this. And he loved dance, and he really wanted to be a dancer. So then eventually he made them build a theater, and he made everybody perform some weird ass show with no audience. They performed it for like the other group members, and then that was it. They had costumes and everything. I'm like, how much time do you all have on your hands? How much time do you have on your hands? Do people really want something to do that badly? Like, I can't imagine if I were in a group and then some man is like, okay, we have to spend the next few months building this theater and performing in this show, and your friends and family can't come to it. I would be like, okay, so here's the thing. I'ma leave. All right. So I'ma go and you all have fun. But okay. He loved dance. He also really wanted to be an actor. And the thing is, there was a lot of misinformation about this man's past, because a lot of them were like, yes, he used to be an actor. He blah, blah, blah. He was like in all these movies. Then they were like, he was in Rosemary's Baby. Then someone else was like, yeah, he was in it for literally 3 seconds at the end, where he turns and looks at the camera for like a second. There's a scene in SpongeBob where SpongeBob's in a commercial and he's like, look, Gary, it's me. And it's literally like the top of his hat. Look, Gary, there I am again. Look. It was the equivalent of that scene of SpongeBob in the movie Rosemary's Baby. So this man really, really wanted to be an actor. Later on, someone was like, oh yeah, he used to be an actor. He used to be a porn star, which, you know, look, don't knock it. Get it how you live, Michelle, but you know, don't be lying to people. So he was putting on these plays and doing all of this stuff to basically get a chance to act and dance and have an audience, because he had like 100-something people just ready and willing to do literally whatever he said because they wanted to be enlightened and they thought that he was the way to do it. Now, not surprisingly, by the way, this was started in LA. And, you know, I feel like if you go to LA and you have some, you're from anywhere else and you say the word enlightenment, a bunch of rich people are going to be like, oh my God. Oh my God. Absolutely. Yes. Sign me the fuck up. Another weird thing about the group was that he didn't let people see their family. So not only could you not have sex, you couldn't have any relationships in or out of the group. You could not see your family. So people were telling these horrible, horrible stories. This one woman was like, my dad was dying and he would not let me leave and go see him. And stuff like that, or like, you know, I had some other crazy family thing and my family had no idea where I was. I'm like, yo, that's insane. People were like, my family went to this cult awareness network to try to come in and get me back, but I was an adult, so they couldn't do anything about it. And also we were like, it's not a cult. Like, it's just a group. They're just my friends. I'm like, yo, I can tell you right now that if my parents found out I was in some, it would either be one of two things. Either they would come in like guns blazing, being kicked down the door, be like, no, we're taking her out of here. Or they'd be like, okay, you want to join this weird ass little group? Have fun then. We're going to leave you. Learn your lesson. Go ahead. And people were in this group for over 20 years is the crazy thing, which, like I said, at this point in the doc, you're like, oh my God, you forget how long these people had been in it. People who look relatively normal, you know, and I guess you might sell it to someone else as like, oh, I'm just in this activities group or something. But I don't know, because you're not interacting with anybody else in the world. And yet it's still, quote unquote, not a cult. And eventually, you know, over time, he just like keeps making them do plays and movies starring him. And people are just starting to get tired of it. But the thing that was so funny was that they don't start getting tired of it until like year 20. They're like, and that's when I said, hey, isn't this supposed to be about God? I'm like, look, why didn't you say something like year one? This man was making you massage him. And you were like, well, this could still be for God. But then 20 years later, you're like, if I have to do one more play, I swear to God. Why didn't you say something earlier? That's crazy. But also, you know, I don't want to victim blame here. I don't want to blame people for staying. But like a lot of the people were like, he was a hypnotherapist. Every time I heard his voice, I had to do whatever he said. It was crazy, which is really, really wild. And I guess if you genuinely do join a group thinking, okay, I'm going to make friends, okay, this is a good activity for me to be doing, then you're not thinking I'm gonna get roped into like a freaking cult. You're not thinking that. So I guess, you know, that's not their fault. Eventually, now this is a good, like, you're a smooth hour and 15 minutes into the documentary when this comes out, when they're like, an ex-member of the group writes a letter saying that he had been sexually assaulting male members of the group and like forcing sexual and romantic relationships with these men who were not necessarily always willing. And at first everyone was like, no, that is so wrong. And then men in the group started coming out and being like, yes, that did happen to me. Men who were still in the group, mind you, because he had such a hold on people, which is really, really wild. And he's so scary looking, and it was just like, ah.
I still felt like I owed him everything. I feel like such an ass saying, it sounds so stupid. I thought like, wow, he's doing this for me. And I never told anyone. Not until everything fell apart.
And, you know, eventually, slowly over time, as people started to come to this realization, people were leaving. And of course, it was so hard to leave this man because they'd spent 20 years devoted to this person who they knew deep down was a bad person, but couldn't, you know, work up the strength to leave, which is totally understandable. And we do not victim blame here. And we respect survivors. Eventually, though, thankfully, a lot of these men and women did end up leaving the group. There was never, you know, some huge investigation. This man was never arrested. It was never anything like that, because it was like a group and people, you know, the lines were kind of blurred in that way. There was no, you know, mass murder to really get him on the news. As far as the police are concerned, it's just like a group of people chilling and they have like a weird relationship with this guy. But like, there's nothing you would really do about that, you know? But the craziest part about it is that even after, like, if this started in the 80s and it is now, I don't know what's going on now, but at the time the documentary was released, it was still going on. There were still people with him, living with him, around him, you know, entranced by him, which is wild and makes you think, okay, maybe it isn't a cult. Maybe it's just like a weird group of people. But it's still so interesting how people can have such a hold on people, and people will really just stay around someone, kind of just like groupies. Their whole thing had always been that whenever he goes out in public, he would make them carry around this chair that they'd have to set up with him. And at the end of the documentary, the director confronts him like on the beach in California. And they're like, yo, like, what's up? And he's like, what are you talking about? Da, da, da. And they like don't let him talk to him. But it's just so crazy. Like, he confronts this man and there's still people with him on the beach and they're just sitting there talking. And it's on YouTube if you want to watch the whole thing. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Are you being a good boy?
No. I don't know what that is.
Don't you think you should learn what that is?
Another crazy thing that had happened was that they had moved to Texas at one point, and then Waco happened, Waco, Texas, where there was like that huge fire and all these people and what was suspected to also be a cult. They all ended up burning and dying. And so he got super, super paranoid. And then there was like all of that, you know, Waco, Texas was happening. This group was happening. And so this is kind of like a low key under the radar type of group. And it's especially especially weird because it's still going on. I think a lot of the documentaries, a lot of the podcasts, a lot of the discourse around like, ooh, cults and our fascination with them is that we believe, oh, there's no way that could happen to me. There's no way that would happen right now. But anytime I watch a documentary about cult, I'm always like, well, these people seem perfectly normal. They just had basic questions that every human being has. Everyone has a question about why am I here? And then he genuinely believes he's doing the right thing too. You know, he probably genuinely believes, yes, I'm like some kind of savior. I am the master. I just always think about that. And it's really interesting when I watch these cult documentaries because you think, okay, how could someone end up doing this for 20 years? And then you hear these people talk about it and they're like, I genuinely felt good while I was there. Like this genuinely changed my life. I loved these people. I loved hanging around them. So it's not like it's totally unfounded. You know, they weren't being tortured. They joined it willingly. And that just makes me think like, what is going to be the next, what is the next iteration of this in modern society? Does it have to do with social media? Does it have to do with some kind of celebrity? Like, what does that look like? Just some questions to think about while you're watching this cult documentary. Because let me tell you, it's wild. And once again, I would like to warn, though, that he is very scary looking. So if that's something that's going to scare you, like, just be aware. Overall, though, like, I actually really enjoyed this documentary the first time I watched it. I literally remember sitting on the couch in my parents' basement watching this documentary in college being like, wow. And being like, dang, that was crazy, because you do not think that it's going to be like that. And it was so, so fascinating because it was so subtle and because they had so much footage. That was the best part of this documentary, was that it would have been boring had it just been interviews with people. Yes, that is crazy. You can say like crazy, crazy stuff about what you endured when you were there. But I think to really help paint the picture, of why it was so easy for these people to fall into this trap for 20 years, it helped to have all of this really cool, glossy, vintage footage of them like playing in a river, of them all having fun together, because it helps you visualize, okay, that is the, you know, like, then you know the motherfucking vibes, like those are the vibes, you know, like that's what it was. And that really made this documentary and really made this experience. You know, I didn't really have that many things that I didn't like about it outside of the narration, which really was wild, because you hear from him in the first half of the documentary, then it's kind of like they forget that he's supposed to be there. And then in the end, it's like, by the way, I went and confronted him, which I thought was a really, really great tie-in at the end. And I love when documentaries bring it back into like a more current day type of situation. I've looked for more recent articles about this group, and unfortunately, there's not that many that aren't from like 2016. So I don't know what is going on with them now, but I think it's really cool that at the end of the documentary, you got to see this is still going on. We tried to confront him about it. People are still clearly hanging out with this man and nobody's going to stop him, which is one, interesting just in and of itself. But two, it makes me think, how many other like low key kind of cultish groups are there / were there? Like that really changed the game up. It changed the game up. And the only other thing that I didn't like was that I thought that the quality of some people's interviews were different. That it, you know, it's just me nitpicking. And I'm sure that there was some production thing. And obviously, you know, you get interviews when you can. Not everybody can be wearing the same thing. You can't get the same shot. But one man in particular looked like he had sent in a Skype interview at like for like a brief second. I was like, what is this footage? And it just did not match the rest of it. But that, you know, that is neither here nor there. Because overall, I would give this documentary 4.5 stars. The half star is quite literally only because the narrator thing was like kind of weird in the beginning, but for a cult documentary, and at the time that I watched it, especially the first time, I was like, yo, this is crazy. This is crazy. This is one of my go-to documentaries that when people ask me for good docs on Netflix, crazy docs on Netflix, just crazy documentaries in general, this is usually the go-to film for me. And so this is always going to be up there on my list. It's not necessarily my favorite documentary of all time, but I do think that it's a really good one to watch, especially now, because I think true crime and cult content is so overdone. And this one is like just a good homegrown documentary about a cult. You know what I mean? Like it just like is emotional. It doesn't seem like it's just grinded out. Like it's just a piece of content thrown at you on a platter. It is just, they put a lot of thought and time into it, which I really, really appreciate. And for that, I think that it is a good, it's one of the last of the Netflix docs that's really good and hits you and touches you. And I was like, oh my gosh, I thought about this for a long time after I watched it the first time, a long time. And not just because this man's face is scary as hell, but because I was like, this is just a wild, just some really wild subject matter and a really, really wild story. So overall, yeah, 4.5 stars. I would definitely recommend, while we're all self-quarantined and while we're all practicing social distancing, if you want to be scared, I'm just letting you know, this is a good documentary to watch. Let me know what you think of the documentary and the episode. I will be sitting at home doing nothing because I ain't got nothing to do because we are all practicing social distancing and we're all self-quarantined. Oh, Lord. But I hope you liked the episode. I hope you enjoyed the documentary. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you on the next episode.